Hey guys, just really quickly before we get to this week's episode, if you listened to last week's episode, which was our best of the decade in 2019, we had a couple technical difficulties and we also had a couple issues once the recording uploaded. At some point, it sounds like me and Lucas have no manners and are talking over one another. So if you listen to it and notice that there's definitely some technical difficulties there, so I do apologize about that. But thank you for listening, and let's get to today's show.
Let's talk about films and shit.
Hey guys, welcome to Ghost Facing It, a podcast where we talk favorite films with some of my favorite people. And today I have the wonderful Wade Phillips on. Wade, thank you for coming on.
Of course, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, yes. I'm actually very excited to do this with you. I feel like me and you are very funny, and I feel like Izzy might disagree and hate it a little bit sometimes, but I feel like me and you are very funny together.
I mean, I like to think I'm funny, and I think if you think you're funny, that's the only person that matters.
Exactly. That's right, Izzy. Suck it. I'm just kidding. I don't think she's caught up on episodes. That's what she was telling me yesterday. So she's not going to hear this for like 3 months. And then she'll be like, yeah. Wow, rude.
I know. It's time to get all the inside jokes out now and then wait 3 months to let them fester.
Exactly. And then we'll both get texts like, what the hell? Sorry. Wade, what movie are we doing today?
So today we're going to talk about the animated classic, Finding Nemo.
Yes, a movie which I've always maintained, it always makes me cry, and I've always found it very sad, I'm not going to lie to you.
I mean, you know, I watched it a little differently this time, and because I knew I was coming on this film podcast, and well, we all know I don't do film, I just enjoy them, and it is like way sadder than I thought it was.
Yeah, and people are always like, what do you mean you don't like Finding Nemo? It's this. I'm like, no, it's kind of sad. It's not that I don't like it. It's just like when I'm going to like a Pixar movie, Finding Nemo isn't my first one.
No, I disagree, but okay.
And really quickly, before we get to the 30-second summary, Wade, tell us a little bit about yourself, how we know each other.
So we met through my roommate, Izzy. You guys worked at Disney together. I also worked there. Surprise, surprise, we were in Orlando. And then, you know, just kind of kept hanging out. And here we are.
Exactly. I know, we've all worked at the most magical place on Earth.
So magical.
It is magical. And actually, Finding Nemo has a ton to do with the parks still. I know they have, at least in Disneyland and Disney World. I don't know about the other international Disneys.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about those either, but I know the two in the U.S.
Yeah.
Both have attractions.
Yes. And actually, the one at Epcot, which used to be the Living Seas, is, well, I guess it's still technically the Living Seas, right?
Yeah, it's in the, pavilion.
Yeah, that's a fun ride. I like that one. All right. So are you ready, Wade? We're going to do the 30-second summary.
You know, I'm not going to be any more ready, so.
Okay. Do you want me to count you down or just you're going to go and I'll start the stopwatch?
Oh, please count me down.
All right. I'll count you down. All right. Ready? In 3, 2, 1, go.
So Marlin and his son Nemo live on a reef. They're fish. Nemo gets taken and put in a fish tank, and Marlin goes across the sea to Sydney to find him and meet some lovely fish friends along the way, and then they're reunited and we learn about love and family and friends.
That was 15 seconds. That was the quickest 30-second summary.
I mean, I was thinking about doing it all in movie quotes, but I figured I'd give you a real one.
Or just like acting out the whole film, kind of like Nathan Lane.
Yeah, I won't give you like copyright issues, but I could.
The Disney person listening in along with the FBI agent is just right. Like, we're listening for everything.
Right. You know, as soon as you bring it up, Disney's like, oh, we're on the phone too.
Yes. And you're just like, God damn it. How do you guys do that? Get off the phone, Bob Iger. We don't want you on this podcast.
Right.
I'm just kidding, Bob Iger. If you're out there and somehow listening, you can come on anytime.
Sponsor. Sponsor. She needs sponsors.
I do need sponsors. I'll just do exclusively Disney films. I am not above it. I'm not above it. But yes, I think that's the quickest 30-second summary we've ever had. And that was a good
The good thing about 30 Second Summaries, what I think is what you did good, is you didn't go get too deep into it. I've noticed, like, if you go too deep into the plot, then you get lost a little bit. And it's just like...
Right. I mean, that is, like, the one thing I've learned from listening to your podcast week after week.
Yes.
It's like, I knew if I was ever on it, I was like, oh, God, I really just surface level.
Yeah, exactly. Bare bones, basis, got it. I like it. I like that you're... So, that's it. Haha, Lucas, suck it. Someone beat your time. That was just for my brother. Better. Yes.
Oh, don't worry. I know who Lucas is. I'm a fan. I listen.
Lucas, look, you do have a fan besides Mom. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm a little mad at him about some of the jokes he's missed, but it's okay. We'll get over it.
You know what? It's fine. I've missed some jokes too, as you have pointed out to me. Like, you were like, this was so, you were there. You could have made this joke, and we didn't make a joke.
Let's be honest, that's all I do.
Well, I think it was particularly for our first episode when we said dicking around on Dagobah or something like that. So many jokes.
And you were just so close. Them. That first episode, you guys were so close on so many levels to multiple things.
Well, you know, we didn't want to peak too quickly. Like, if we peaked in that first episode, you know, like, we can't go from there.
That is true. That is very true.
But yay, so Lucas is number one fan. Let's get started.
No, I think that's your mob. I don't think I can outrage your mob.
Lucas is a number two. Well, then I have other family members who will be like, we like Lucas.
I'll be fan club.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So Lucas is fan club. You said you rewatched this. I just rewatched this, and we were talking a little bit. Finding Nemo is, it's funnier than I remembered it being, and I think because it has been a very long time since I've seen it, but it is also very sad and heartwarming at the same time.
Yeah, it's way different than I thought it was.
Yeah,
but I still love it.
Well, and I think you were saying, kind of like how I said, like, I watch Scott Pilgrim, like, one, at least once every 6 months. This is, like, that movie for you, right?
Oh, yeah. It's one of those, it's, like, great background, because I know the whole thing forward and backwards. But, yeah. Like, you can, I also just like fish. So, you know.
You were like, this film was for me. And yeah, yes, it has a great story, but all the fish.
Yeah, I mean, my first AOL address was BobberBoy100.
Was it really?
Because I float, and I like to, like, float in the water and look at fish.
That's fantastic. That's great.
So, no shame here.
And what about this film makes it your favorite? Like, what makes you love coming back to the familiarity of Finding Nemo?
I'm not 100% sure. Like, I genuinely enjoy this film. I quote it all the time. I think because it's really quotable.
It is.
You kind of have everything in it. You do get a little bit, you have, like, immediate emotional attachment. And then, you know, the first time you watch it, you're like, are they going to make it? Are they not? What's happening? And then everything comes together in a nice little package with a bow.
Yes. And especially this past time watching it, Dory's monologue towards the end, which major props to Ellen DeGeneres, who is, like, obviously voice casting. This part was written for her. But that very sad, just kind of, it's very sad because she's begging Marlin not to leave. I mean, like, right. I cry in everything anyway, but Jesus Christ.
Right. She, like, realized where her home was.
Right.
And she was like, oh, this is great for me. I've been lost for however long. And. Like, you're my home.
Right. And now, I haven't seen Finding Dory again, because I'm a big crier. I'm assuming you've seen Finding Dory.
Of course. You know I have.
I know. I didn't need to, you know, I felt like it was good to ask, because that's what a host should do, but I just assumed. But, so I can't speak to Finding Dory, which was kind of in the long line of Pixar movies that got very late sequels, like, over a decade later. Which always cracks me up.
And truly, as Finding Dory is, like, a nice film.
Yeah.
But Finding Nemo, I would consider, like, a classic Pixar film.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of the classics. And I was actually looking to see where it landed on the Pixar roster, because I knew it was one of it was an early Pixar movie, but I wasn't completely sure. So it was after, obviously, Toy Story and Toy Story 2, but also after A Bug's Life. But I think it was the fourth movie after that. So.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say I did the same thing.
Okay. We both did research. This is like the first one I actually like did a lot of homework on, and I was very proud of myself. But I think this Finding Nemo, like Toy Story was obviously that new look of animation that Toy Story had and Pixar was bringing to it. And then they did a couple other movies. And Toy Story 2 is actually very emotional as well. Another one that makes me cry a lot and I avoid as much as possible, even though it's a very good movie. But I think Finding Nemo was the first one kind of after the first Toy Story to be like, look what we can do with not just the animation, but look at what we can do with the story as well. I don't know if you agree with that or because, again, Toy Story 2 has that same emotional story with finding home, very different than Finding Nemo with Jessie and all that. But I think this was the first one that kind of gave it some clout, if that makes sense.
No, I would agree. I think before that, it's been different. Because I think it might have been fifth. It might have come out right after Monsters, Inc.
But it was after Monsters. You're right. It is fifth. Yeah.
And so, you know, you have all these stories about, like, finding home and finding, but this one was really, like, that's kind of the storyline.
Right.
Instead of, like legitimately a
B-plot. Right, like, legitimately that storyline. And I do love that it's called Finding Nemo, because Nemo is Latin for no one. That's always cracked me up. And obviously he's named for Captain Nemo from 20,000 Leagues. There's actually a lot of great names in this, especially if Nemo and then Bruce... the shark, who is named after Bruce the Shark from Jaws, which famously Bruce the Shark was not cooperative for that film, which I really love as well.
Oh yeah, no, it's really great. They did a good job.
They did. Good on you, filmmakers. Good on you. That know what you're doing. Look at us. They're like, yeah, we know. Whoever's listening to this,
you
like,
studied.
Look at you acting all smart. And I do want to talk a little bit about the animation in this as well, because the water animation in particular, and I was reading a trivia fact that actually the water animation was too good, so they had to bring it back a little bit. But the water animation in this is fantastic.
It's fantastic. And of course, you know, in my research, I did watch all the DVD extras. So
I did not do that. Did not. But
yeah, that's what they like kept mentioning about how they kept in all their practice tests doing like too good of water, and they're like, we need it to look a little more fake.
Yeah, because they were afraid that people would think, oh, they just took video of water and then like superimposed the animation over it. But that's how good the water animation was, which just cracks me up that they were like, this looks too real,
right? And you hear stuff like that, and like another thing they said they did was like with the like anemones, they took what they learned on doing the fur for Mike or Sully in Monsters, Inc. And they essentially turned it upside down in the animating process and made the anemones from it. That's... And you hear like all the fascinating things they did. And one of the first things on the like director's round table that they have on the DVD is how nobody thought this film was going to be good.
No, I think at one point Michael Eisner, because they had someone different voicing Marlin, I think, at one point, and Michael Eisner said to them, like, they think this is going to be good, but it's really not, or something like that. And it's funny to think, like, especially how successful this movie was, like, that at some point someone was like, no, this movie is just not going to be what they think it is. And it was.
Right? Like, it's so funny, because it really is like, what a lexicon is Nemo? Like, everybody knows it. You go in a fish store and you're like, oh, look at Nemo.
Right. It's almost like clownfish have almost been renamed Nemo. And then whatever kind of fish Dory is. You know what I mean? Like this movie defines those fish now. Sorry, fish.
Right. They're all those poor reef fish.
Yeah. They're all like, oh my God, some kid just seen fucking Finding Nemo. He called me Dory again. That's not my name. Like,
it's probably stolen from the reef too, because that's an issue.
Yes. Oh, I will say this film does a good job kind of looking at how problematic humans are in relation to the ocean, like, which I appreciate, because we are very problematic to a lot of habitats, but particularly the ocean, it's pretty bad.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought it was... It's great how, you know, you start off in this, like, pristine reef environment and move to that cool blue, like, deep ocean. And then as soon as you hit Sydney, it's polluted, it's terrible, you have a dentist who took reef fish off of the reef.
At one point, I think the dentist even says, like, oh, look at this little guy, I rescued him.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you're just like, oh, you're like, oh, bad human.
Right? You're like, oh, no.
Exactly. You're just like, no. Oh, this is horrible. There's even a shark fin soup joke in this movie, which I definitely did not catch as a kid, but caught this time. And I was like, ooh, right? It was a funny joke, but dear Lord, that's not good. Right. And then, of course, Darla, the fish killer, gets like a horror movie entrance, which cracked me up both times it happens because they use the Psycho music.
It's Psycho, and they like cracked the glass on her frame.
Yes, it's like, so everything good
about her.
It's one of those laughs that's legitimately laugh out loud that just kind of like escapes you and is surprising. You're just like, oh, that's very funny, and oh my god, like, she's horrifying.
Right, it doesn't get old either, because every time you're like, even though I know it's happening.
Oh yeah, well, especially like the second time it happened, because I think she's looking at something and then she just looks over really quickly and the Psycho music starts up. I think I almost like spilled, like spit out my drink because I was taking a sip. I was like, oh, that's so funny.
Right.
So good. But yeah, the humans in this are not great. They're not like horrible, but we need to be better as
right humans. I mean, they're just like humans.
Yes,
but they're, you know, tramping along. It is a state on where we are at.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's not great at all.
No.
And I do want to go, we talked a little bit about the story, but, and like you said, it's a story about finding home, but it's also a road trip movie and also an escape movie, because once we meet the fish, obviously, in the dentist's office, who had tried to escape before. Also, I just want to shout out to Gil, who is voiced by Willem Dafoe, who is perfect. But like within the first 30 seconds, I was like, wow, Gil is a psycho. Like I actually said that out loud, especially like the way his introduction is. And you're just like, oh. And him being voiced by Willem Dafoe, like, just kind of adds to it. It is perfect. And Gil is a great character. I love Gil. I said that, but like I literally said out loud, oh, Gil is a psycho. Like,
yeah, I think he has to be.
I think so too, to have all those kind of daring, crazy plans, right? to try and escape.
Like, he wants to get out.
He does. He's like, I need to get out. And all the other ones are like, perfect. I also really like that all the other fish, like whenever there's a dental procedure, they're like commenting on it. And that was also really funny, which I think just went over my head as a kid again. Just like, I don't know. It was a lot funnier this time as an adult.
It is.
I might have been a dumb child. I was a dumb child.
I'm a dumb adult, so, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not much better as an adult, but, you know, I get all the jokes. There's a lot of butt jokes in this movie. Again, I appreciate it. A lot of butt jokes, though. But I do like the way they mix, like, the road trip adventure film and the escape film. And they really meshed them really well together, which was kind of, which I, like, especially as now that I'm older, I really appreciated that. Which kind of those two movies kind of don't usually go hand in hand. So that was kind of a fun, like, one's trying to get somewhere, one's trying to get out of somewhere. And I think they meshed that story really well.
Yeah, oh, I would agree. Like, it's not, you definitely don't see a mix, but
no,
they came together nicely.
It did. Yeah. And again, obviously I'm saying that like, oh, wow. They just like, they're really great story. Like they're like, yeah, clearly like the story team over at Pixar is always really good, but it was fun to see, like, it was fun to see those kind of two genres, which again, you don't see a lot of movies like that. I'm sure there are a ton, but you don't really see movies like that together. So that was something I really like appreciated, like this time watching it. Okay. Mostly me just pointing out obvious things. Sorry, Wade.
No, that's fine. This is my favorite film. I hope you point out things you enjoy about it.
Yes.
That's why we're here. I hope to turn everybody to Finding Nemo.
As just like their favorite film of all time.
I'm like, sorry, your whole podcast is now just Finding Nemo podcast.
Just every week. We're going to do a minute by minute summary. This movie is 90 minutes, so we'll have 90 episode series on Finding Nemo. And I do, and like you said, this movie just has a ton of lines in it, which I didn't realize how much of this movie I knew until I was rewatching it. My favorite line has always been, "Curse you, aqua scum," which I say, me and my brother say all the time, but I forgot it was from this movie until it happened. And I was like, oh, this is where it's from. Again, I'm a dumbass. But there's just a ton, obviously the mine seagulls and the shark bait, ooh-ha-ha, that made me laugh harder than it should have. What do you think is like the most iconic line or scene that's super popular from this movie?
I would say, I think in terms of like watching it, not necessarily most iconic that everybody knows, but one of the biggest lines is when Nemo says, "I hate you."
Yes.
To his dad right before he's like going to go touch the butt.
And yes.
I think that is like the turning point for the film.
So that's the big point for you, just like that big emotional, just kind of like, because he's always kind of dealt with his dad's agoraphobia, for lack of a better word, and he's right. gone along with it.
And right, that, like he doesn't understand why his dad is the way he is.
Right.
But then you have this moment where like his dad's reliving everything that happened.
Right.
And he's being peer pressured, and he's like, "No, I'm going to go do it. I hate you."
Right.
And then
I'm
going to
go touch the butt.
Everything.
It does, yes. And I do like the way that Nemo just looks at him as he like slaps the bottom of the boat. That made me laugh. Because he's like, "Do not touch it." He's just like, slap.
Right.
And then just like dead on looks at him. Oh, that's so funny. It is, but it is a very emotional moment because you're just like, I did wonder kind of what Marlin told Nemo, like about what happened. And I don't think they've ever really.
I don't think he ever finds, like, I personally don't think he really knows.
No, I just think that Marlin was just like, "Yep, we've always lived in this anemone, and everything is horrifying outside," which again, right. Marlin, I don't blame you because it is horrifying outside. But like, that was something like, as I was watching, I was like, I wonder what Marlin told him, but I agree with you. I don't think Marlin ever said to Nemo, "This is what happened to your mother and your siblings," because it's horrifying. That opening scene is like soul crushing.
And one of the like extras, they go through like how they were planning on doing more with that opening. And you can see Marlin used to be like free spirited and open and like willing.
Yes.
And then that happens and the Barracuda comes and everybody dies and he's like, "Oh, nope, I'm done. Shut down."
Well, and then I kind of also, because I know Marlin had chosen that spot because I don't know if like he had said at some point, "Oh, look, you can like see whales or we can see anything right. that's coming." And then obviously there's other animals out there. So I wonder what the logic was behind that, because like, you know what I mean?
That's always been my question. Like the first question I have in this movie is they talk about how good of a neighborhood the drop-off is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is it?
Yeah, I was like, because then that piranha's there, and that piranha's going to do what a piranha does.
Well, it's a barracuda.
Which it does. A piranha. Oh my god, not a piranha. A barracuda.
Yeah, Darla's the piranha.
But... Yes. Sorry. Clearly, again. Wow, clearly you do love fish, because I had no idea. I was like,
I truly love fish. And it's not the correct barracuda either, but that's okay.
Were you just a little horrified when I said piranha?
No, I knew what you meant, but I figured, you know, for the purpose of the audience, yes. I would correct you.
Just Courtney is wrong. It is definitely a barracuda. So, but yes, like the barracuda's there. Like, I don't know, like, and those sharks were around there as well. Because, I mean, they went a little bit far, but not too far to encounter those sharks.
Correct.
So I just like, I wonder what Marlin's logic was. And he's like, "Oh, look at this nice view of nothing."
Right. Right. Like, is that a nice view?
Is and like it? You said, like, it's like a nice neighborhood. I beg to differ, sir.
Right. They like talk about all the like attributes and it's like, this is where you want to live.
Yeah. But, and also it did kind of seem like, what does the wife have a name, or did they just not give her a name?
Her name's Coral.
Coral. That's it. I kind of thought he was saying Carl at one point because of the way his accent was. And I was like, that's not her name.
And it's
it's Coral. I wish his name was Carl.
So much funnier.
It would be a lot funnier. The Pixar, whoever wrote this, is just like horrified. Like, these people, what are they talking about?
Swines. Just go back to where you came from.
Yeah, exactly. Please stop talking about our film. That is prestigious. Please stop. But she kind of seems reluctant to live there. At least that's what I kind of got. So I think like Marlin kind of pushed her. Yeah, like pushed her into this decision. And she was like, oh, there's probably barracudas around. And piranha. I'm going to stand behind my piranha. I'm sure there's piranhas around somewhere.
I don't think piranhas are saltwater fish.
Well.
But they are in water. So you know what? I'll give it to you.
Yes, but there's a very distinct like difference between freshwater fish and saltwater fish. So I'm just going to start talking about fish because I do not know.
That is okay.
Can't believe it said piranha. It's definitely a barracuda.
But you're on theme for the movie.
I am on theme for the movie. I'm like, Dory, I can't remember anything. Leave me alone. Who are you? What is this podcast about?
I don't really know, but I think it's a Finding Nemo podcast.
It's just exclusive. It's not a film podcast. Got it. It's just exclusively Finding
Nemo. Exclusively Finding Nemo. Yes.
Got it. But yeah, just like this beginning is just so sad. It's not as sad as Up's. Up still has the winner for saddest opening 10 minutes.
Well, Up's has like more hope. You're like, yes. Oh, they got together. They're going to have a, oh no, they don't. And this one's just immediately tragic.
Yeah, it is. It's like very just that. Like, and all the kids too. Like, Jesus Christ. The massacre.
It really was.
It's horrible. I will say Up is another one that I'm not a huge fan of because I just find that whole movie sad as well. Even like the ending, if I'm being very honest. Oh. Like, it's a little hopeful, but I still find it very sad. Because the little kid's dad doesn't. Oh, I've only seen it once, to be fair. Let me just say, that movie made me cry so much in the theater, I had a headache coming out of that film.
I know, I did know that. I know you really don't like Up.
I don't like Up. It's a cute movie, but the little kid's dad doesn't come back for him, right? Like, he's just, like, left there with the old man. Yeah,
but, like, that's, I mean, it is the one thing that a lot of these films kind of have in common, is, like, that's real life.
That don't ever love anything? That's like, what I got out of it.
I mean, yes, but that might be personal. But but you know, like, some kids don't have parents.
Yes, some kids, which,
you know, you kind of like find your own.
Yes, and I love found family, and I do understand, like, that's the nice part of it, but also, like, the more you think about it, you're like, that kid's dad just totally left him there. Like,
oh yeah.
Oh no.
That's super sad.
It is very sad. Sorry, I'll get off my little Up rant. I'm sure I've some people are just like, fuck her. Who doesn't like Up?
Right? Somebody's like, oh, can't listen to this podcast anymore.
Exactly. Bob Iger's officially shut it down. Uppers. Oh, I love that. I would never do it because I'm not a huge fan of Up, but you should totally do that podcast.
I'm not that dedicated.
You could be the Uppers podcast, and I'm the Downers part of it, and I bring it down on all the Pixar movies. Like, you build them up.
Perfect.
And then I just tear them down.
Perfect.
I love it. Man, we have so many great ideas for podcasts today.
No one steal that. It's now copyrighted.
Yes, copyrighted. TM, 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 TM. That is ours. actually, that TM, 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 I stole from another podcast I listen to, so I doubt they're listening, but I'm very sorry. Don't sue me. Please. They're not listening. They're
I bet they are. Everybody's listening.
I wish everybody was listening. Bob Iger, you still here? Call me.
Yeah, we got those Disney ads ready.
Except, did you not hear our great idea about the Upper and Down podcast?
I mean,
it's solid gold. It sells itself. It's basically like the Lion King movie that Disney put out last year that was basically just going to make money, even though it was just the animated film, not animated.
I still haven't seen it.
If you've seen the original animated film, you've seen it.
Somehow, yeah, that's what I heard.
It's an exact copy, yet somehow 20 minutes longer. And I don't know how they did it.
Unlike Finding Nemo, which is an original.
Yes.
And beautiful film.
Yes.
Still, I will bring it back on topic.
Thank you. Yes. I have a tendency to get off topic.
No, that's fine. I don't care.
Somehow, I don't know how yet, I will shoehorn Adam Driver into this Finding Nemo podcast. I haven't figured it out quite yet.
He could have been one of the sharks. He could have been.
He could have been
like Anchor or Chum.
But, I mean, he wasn't, I think he was like in the Marines at this point. I'm going to shoehorn him in, don't worry. It's getting there.
I can't
there.
Wait. Please tell me.
That's what someone at work was like, I listen to your podcast. You really like Adam Driver, huh? And I was like, yep, sure do. So actually, I can segue this. It has nothing to do with Adam Driver. But again, this voice cast is really, really great. We have Albert Brooks, Ellen DeGeneres, and Willem Dafoe, obviously. But you also have Brad Garrett. You have Allison Janney. Oh my God, Barbossa from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. What the hell is his name? Shit.
Yeah, I'm not your friend for that. I have no idea.
Oh, crap. I'm usually, oh, shit. And he's done other movies besides that. Oh, God. Okay, I'm going to have to look it up. But anyway, this voice cast is pretty great while I hastily look up his name because it's going to kill me.
It's honestly, it's a great voice cast, and it would not be the same film if they didn't have that cast. It just wouldn't be.
And I saw Jeffrey Rush. Jeffrey Rush, who plays the Pelican. I'm very sorry for just calling you Barbossa from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
You're more than that.
You are. You've done a ton in your career. It's not just that. And I've just like pigeonholed you. But yes, it's a great cast. I did see that Albert Brooks wasn't originally Marlin. It was. Oh, I just saw this too. It was William H. Macy. And that was what caused Michael Eisner to be like, I don't think this movie works. So they replaced him with Albert Brooks. And I do think Albert Brooks adds something to Marlin that I think wouldn't be the same if it wasn't him.
Oh, 100% agree.
Especially when he's trying to tell those jokes. I do like the running gag that clownfish are funny. And then his jokes are just really...
He has one joke and he can't tell it.
No. And then he has like a legit joke at the end, but at the same time, like... It was still like, it was all right.
Well, it's the same dad joke. It's the same joke the whole time. And at the end, they cut out half of it.
Yes. And in my head, I'm kind of like, you know, we've gone on this long journey. Can I just hear the whole joke? I think we've earned it.
With frauds like these, who needs anemones?
And then you're just like, haha, I didn't hear the rest of it. So we got to start over, guys. I need to know what the whole joke was.
I want the setup.
Exactly. I want the setup, and then don't just give me the punchline. I want the setup, too. But I do feel like Marlin at the end was probably one of those people who, like, kept telling this, like, his great adventure story over and over, like, and people were like, oh, God, don't talk to Marlin unless you want to hear about that time that he had to go find his son who ran away or whatever.
I think he definitely just retold that story.
Like, but a gazillion times.
I think with,
times.
Like, Dory sitting there.
Yes.
It probably wasn't as bad as we all think it was, because she's entertaining.
She's very entertaining, which leads to, obviously, Ellen DeGeneres, who was perfect for Dory, and I think is what part of makes Dory, obviously she makes Dory who Dory is, but she's wonderful in this film.
Oh, 1,000%. Wouldn't have cast anybody else.
No. I actually can't even imagine, like, who else could possibly have been in this film?
No.
Like, besides the voice cast we have.
Right. It's hard to recast this film because it's something you've always heard.
Yes. And I know in the past couple movies I've talked about a little bit about rebooting or, you know, doing a sequel or recasting or, like, fan casting stuff, but this isn't one of those movies. I think, like, this is the perfect cast. And I think animation voice casting doesn't get some of the credit it deserves. Like, I think I had mentioned this to you as well. Like, animation in general, a lot of people still see it as something for kids. But this voice cast is part of what makes this movie so great. Also, Willem Dafoe, who I mentioned earlier, who is just, like, the perfect amount of Willem Dafoe in this movie, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really, like, I had thought about, because I knew you asked that question, and I had thought about it, and I was like, I genuinely don't know. Because I don't think it gets, you know, there are some animated movies that, like, you could recast with other people and it'd be fine.
Yes.
But I don't think this is one of them.
No, I mean, this is one where it very much is the voice cast and the story and that perfect mix of story, animation, and voice casting. Like, I agree. Like, there's some movies, like animated movies that you hear and you're like, you know who would have been great at this? This person, but right. Like this is almost a little like Aladdin with the genie, like
right.
Only Robin Williams
out
could
the park.
Yeah, and I think, like, everybody's solid in this. Also, this voice cast has Allison Janney, who I love anyway.
I mean, how can you not?
I love she's Allison. Whenever I see she's in a movie, I instantly am just like, I'm like 100% there. I'm like, let's do this.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, I know I'm going to like it. We're good.
Yes. Oh, and she won an Oscar a few years ago. Oh, totally well-deserved. This just turned into an I Heart Allison Janney podcast as well.
We love you. We'll sponsor you. You know.
We will. Yes. Hi, Allison Janney, if you're listening. Please
come on this podcast.
Please come on my podcast. I'll just tell you how much I love you for an hour.
This is Ghost Facing It with Allison Janney featuring Courtney.
Exactly. You could take it over if you want. I don't care at this point. If you said so, I'd be like, yes. What else would you like of mine? Perfect. Right. Take it from me. That sounded weirdly, I feel like, more sexual than it should have. I didn't mean it like that. Sorry. I don't know how we got here. I'm talking about a kid's movie.
We took a left turn.
We took a major left turn. This is so out of there. But yes, a great voice cast. And I'm trying to think, because you've seen Finding Dory and I haven't, did most of the fish from this one return besides Dory, Marlin, and Nemo in Finding Dory?
No. There's like a small section in the beginning, and there's a small section in the end with the reef.
Okay.
But the majority of the film is new fish, new characters. And it might be like they might have had some of the same voice cast come in and like do other characters. I don't know about that. But like the main ones, the main three are there. And then other than that,
None of the OG crowd from
Finding Nemo. Yeah, the OG crowd doesn't really feature.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. That just made me not want to watch that sequel even more.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a great, I have it because it's about fish. But, you know, as a movie, I have not watched it nearly as many times.
Kind of, and again, I haven't seen Finding Dory, so I can't, you'll have to speak to this a little more than I can, but her story sounds sad just from this movie, because it sounds like her parents kind of left her, because she always felt, like, in her explanation for it, like, she always felt like she was too much, because she couldn't remember, which was just, like, an even sadder part of it, so I don't know if, are her parents, like, alive in the sequel? So
I'll spoil it if you want me to.
I was about to say, yes, please spoil this movie, because I genuinely have no idea what happens, and I'm very curious.
So, her parents are alive and well, and she grew up in an aquarium in California. How she made it to Australia, still don't know. That was left out, and that's the story I really wanted, but maybe one day we'll get that road trip movie.
But, for the third one, Finding Dory Part 2.
It's like Dory's road trip. But yes. But she gets lost in the fish tank and then sucked out through the like water recycling system. Okay. And then she gets popped in the ocean. And she always felt like a burden on her parents, but her parents like followed her and tried to find her.
Oh. So it's like Finding Nemo, but unsuccessful.
Yeah, it's an it's Finding Dory is Dory finding her parents.
Okay.
And that's what it's about. And so it's kind of a less well done storyline of Finding Nemo. Like, it's a rough draft.
Well, and how did they lose her? I mean, they lost her, obviously, at some point, between California and Australia, which, again, that's a movie I'd like to see.
Right. Well, they didn't, when Dory gets, like, sucked out of the tank through the water system, which I don't think fish tanks work that way, but that's fine.
They do in this universe. There's a lot of filtration talk in this movie, so.
Yes, there's, I feel like, semi-unrealistic filtration talk, but that's okay. But yeah, she like leaves the fish tank through essentially pipes, and the pipes lead her to the ocean. And then her parents were asleep when that happened, and they wake up and try to find her. And they don't necessarily know, but they kind of figure out what happened, I think. And then they stay around the ocean by the aquarium, thinking that that's where she is. However, she's moved all the way to Australia.
Again, I feel like that was the movie to do. The Australia, or the California to Australia road trip.
I mean, like, that is the one I wanted to see.
As you were sitting there, like, in the theater, were you like, well, this wasn't what I thought Finding Dory was. I was like,
this is fun and colorful, but we're missing the big question.
How did she get here?
How?
Well, how, and this, and then we'll go back to talking about Finding Nemo, but how sad is Finding Dory? I feel like that just sounds like a very sad movie. It's not, like, up-level sad, is it?
No, I think it's sad when you see her, like, as a young fish, a small baby fish, accidentally get taken from her parents, essentially.
So is that what caused the memory problem? Or did they explain what the memory problem came from?
And she was born with it. She's always had it.
Oh, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's a memory problem. Like, maybe it's
Maybelline. Yeah, just some nice, what season are we in? Some nice, like, spring colors in the ad. And there's Dory. Maybe it's memory loss.
Wow, we just took that to a dark place. Sorry, Maybelline. Please sponsor me. Sorry. I can come up with clever
Ghostbasement at checkout.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, please don't associate yourself. I'm going to get like an email. Please do not associate yourself with me. This is not what we want. It still sounds like this movie would have made me cry. I feel like
it would have, yes.
Yeah. I feel like it's on Disney Plus, though, so maybe I'll check it out.
I think it's worth it if you haven't seen it just to see it.
Yeah.
And like, if you liked Finding Nemo, it's worth it to watch that movie. If Finding Nemo's not really, like, your cup of tea, I'm gonna be truthful, don't watch Finding Dory. Like, there's no point.
Well, yeah, but. I mean, and I think, like, it is so funny that, like, a ton of these movies are getting sequels so many years later. Like, I really love The Incredibles, and I was excited to get The Incredibles sequel, but I don't know if you felt like this with Finding Dory, but it had been kind of so long that I really loved, like, Incredibles 2, but at the same time, I was like, I would have loved this like 10 years ago.
Like, well, I think that's the problem is if they had released it sooner.
Yeah.
We all probably would like it better.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like if I get to show this to my nephew, I'll show them both in a row.
Right.
And be like, great. We've had a great, wonderful 4 hours.
Right.
And you probably love both films.
Right. And then, but for the people who had to like wait, it's just kind of like, again, I really loved Incredibles 2, but it was one of those, like, I kind of got out of the theater, like, this was a great movie, but where were you, right. Like?
And I think with Finding Nemo, like, Incredibles was almost set up for a sequel, mm-hmm. and then they just decided not to make it for 10 years. Whereas right. Finding Nemo, the story closed.
Yes.
It's a full movie. It would have been a perfectly great standalone film.
Yes.
And it comes is full circle. A perfectly great standalone film.
Yes. I completely agree. Like, there's, to me, in my head, I'm like, I know there's a sequel, but I'm very satisfied with how Finding Nemo ends. So I'm like, cool. This movie's over. Like, I didn't have any lingering questions besides how many times Marlin tells that joke and that story afterwards. But beyond that.
That's the built-in drinking game.
That is the built-in, yeah. It's like Finding Nemo bingo.
But you're right. It didn't need it. It felt almost maybe a little forced in certain aspects.
Well, and also I feel like Ellen DeGeneres, I think her popularity's only skyrocketed since the first Finding Nemo. So if you,
right.
And Dory's just super popular. So, I mean, it is one of those where Disney's just like, hey, do we need money for something? You know what we could do?
Right. And I don't blame them. If I did that, like, I would do it too.
Yes. And again, I haven't seen Finding Dory, and from what you've said, the story's very, very well done, and it's, you know, it's not like the original Finding Nemo, but, like, so I can't, I'm not, like, being like, oh, stupid Finding Dory, but it just does, like, these sequels do kind of, especially now, it just seems like Disney's kind of in a money grab sometimes.
Right, and that's, and I mean, like, you know, it's coming from Pixar, which I think almost all of their movies, whether you really like them or not, you can admit that they're well done.
Yes.
you know, except for maybe like a couple, but so it's coming from a film aspect that's like knocked it out of the park time and time again. So you know it's going to be good in that aspect.
Right. You're at least going to get a good movie out of it.
Right. And that's what it is. It's a good movie.
Right. Finding Nemo lends itself to being a great movie. Right. Especially after my rewatch.
Like, I think Finding Nemo is like a Pixar classic.
Yes. Oh, I completely agree with you.
Would not call Finding Dory that.
No. No. It's just, and it almost like it was kind of that, it struck light, you know, like lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place. I kind of feel like that. That's more apparent with like the Cars movies and the sequels to Cars, which.
Okay, well, let's not get started on those because I also love those.
Okay, well,
and I am in the minority.
I really like the first Cars. And then I saw, I haven't seen
Cars. The
first
and the third are fantastic.
So I haven't seen the third one. I've seen one and two. Two, I was a little disappointed.
The should not exist. Much like Finding Dory. Doesn't need to be there.
No. And if I remember, I've only seen two once, but if I remember correctly, Mater gets recruited to join some international spy agency.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was remembering that.
Yeah, that's all you have to say.
And then I think that was the reason I didn't see three. I just remember Cars 3 trailer because the teaser trailer was in front of everything and it was literally just Lightning McQueen getting into a car wreck and getting destroyed. And I remember, I can't remember what movie it was, but there was some kid like 2 rows in front of me. I was like, oh my God, like just like seeing this horrifying thing. And I was like, oh, what are you doing, Pixar? I know you go dark, but.
Cars 3 is honestly worth a watch.
Okay, maybe I'll watch it. I'm assuming that's on Disney Plus as well.
I would assume. Who knows? But I think if you do Cars and Cars 3, that's a good film franchise. You can skip to.
Okay. Unfortunately, where were you 5 or 6 years ago when Cars 2 came out to say, hey, skip it?
You know, I was probably sitting there being like, it's fine.
It's okay. That is funny that you said that you're in the minority with Cars, because I do feel kind of like Cars gets kind of swept under the rug a little bit.
A lot of people I know don't like it. And like a lot of people I know love Finding Nemo. And so I thought they'd like Cars, and people hate Cars.
I don't know. Like the first one I really love. And also that soundtrack for the first one is just amazing anyway. But I really like the story. I like that they're on Route 66. Even like the first one, people don't like. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, people don't like, and I don't know. It's just, I think it's great, but you know, who am I? I'm just here talking about my favorite movies.
Exactly. That would have been kind of funny if you were like, no, fuck Cars. Like if it had just like. Delved into that, like, oh, like, no.
How dare you?
I've hit a sore spot.
You've offended me. I'm leaving.
Yes, yeah. You're just, like, hanging up. Hello? Wait, are you still there? No? Oh, well. That was a short podcast. All right. No, but I do agree with, like, what you were saying about Pixar, and especially still at this time, I think this was, and I think we mentioned it a little bit earlier, like, this was the one that kind of got it back to, not that A Bug's Life and Monsters, Inc. and Toy Story 2 weren't great, but I think this was kind of something I don't think people were expecting from it. Right. I think it does have to do with that, like that opening scene that like is super serious, because I don't think we've had a moment in that.
Right, and then you have the opening scene, and then I love the title card. I love it.
Yes.
Just like the open water, the music, the Finding Nemo comes across the screen. And you're like,
yeah,
I love it. I could watch this for 2 hours.
100% agree. I do want to talk about the score really quickly. This score was fantastic, which
it
I was super surprised.
My phone. I listen to it regularly.
Do you really? That's amazing. Sorry.
I love it. I mean, I love film scores.
Yes.
I love the Finding Nemo film score. I think they did such an awesome job.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question about film scores in a second, but I do want to point out.
Low expectations.
No. No low expectations. Hey, listen, people let me do a podcast and like 5 people listen to it, so there are no expectations out there. You're good. I do really love the piece of the score that really stuck with me, and I was really surprised it stuck with me, because unless you're in a superhero movie or like Star Wars or something like that, like the score like usually kind of just passes in one ear and out the other for me, which is bad. I should be listening to more scores, just more in general. But the scene where Marlin's immediately after Nemo's just been taken by the scuba divers and is going after the boat, that piece of score is so great. And I don't know what it's called. I'll try and find it. But holy shit, that was, it like gave me chills. And I was like, this music's amazing. The whole music throughout is all me. I was surprised at how much it was catching my ear. But like that one piece where like right when he's trying to catch up to the boat, like I was like, holy shit.
Right. I think it's a great section. I mean, I could go on and on about each section of the score. I truly love it.
Yeah,
but it builds. They've done it in such a way that like some movies don't do, where the score is a part of the movie.
Right.
And it's not with lyrics. And I think a lot of movies that the score is part of the movie are like lyrical sometimes.
Right.
And this is one of the ones that's just like pure instruments. Yeah. And just really fits what's happening.
Yeah, and this movie, I mean, it isn't a musical, which I think it's better it's not a musical. I know some of the animated movies they've taken musicals in general in a whole new way, because especially Disney, a lot of their animated movies are musicals, but I do like that it's just the score here that really gives it that oomph, if that makes sense. Like you were saying though, like it's so powerful and it doesn't need lyrics with it.
Right. And I think part of that is like you're in the water. So already there's not much to work with for them.
Right.
And like, yes, technically it's beautiful. You've got the like detritus, all the like light beams, everything's going. But if the characters aren't speaking, there's virtually no noise.
Right. I mean, there's there are parts of the film where there just isn't anything. And it is just that kind of loneliness of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And that isolation that you get out there, especially like in the deeper parts of the ocean. But I'm telling you, that one little piece of score when he's going after Nemo, it took me by surprise, because I was like, oh crap, this is amazing. Like, also really quickly, so my question I was going to ask you, what is your favorite movie score of all time? I just want to know. I'm just very curious.
See, I don't know. I don't know if I have a favorite one. I appreciate a lot of them.
Yes. There's a lot of great scores out there.
I love a good score. Like, if I walk out of a movie seeing it and I immediately just like humming the score in my head.
Yeah.
That's one that I'm like, yes, which happens fairly a good bit. But I don't know if I have a favorite. I'm trying to think. I don't know if I have a favorite one.
No worries. I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that.
I wasn't prepared.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm very sorry. No, just now everybody's gonna be like, Courtney just like put people on spot.
No, they're gonna look at me and be like, he said he likes film scores, he doesn't have one. I bet he doesn't have a favorite composer. And I'm like, no, I don't.
Oh no, the obvious answer is John Williams. Come on, Wade.
I mean, they're good.
They are, they're so good. I mean, I'm completely with you though, because there's just a ton of like film scores, and a lot of the ones that come to mind for me are like John Williams scores and are very
obvious. I think, like, I mean, John Williams is great, fantastic.
Yes, I like literally the movies that he's done scores for, that like without those scores, that I don't think the movies same. No, it would not be the same. Like you look at Jaws, Star Wars, Harry Potter, Indiana Jones.
Right. And I think a lot of them, I think like a lot of my favorite ones probably are his.
Yeah.
But I don't know offhand. I'm not sure.
What do you mean you don't have your top three?
Composers, it's real tragic, isn't it?
On that. It is real tragic.
It took another me new an podcast. Entire 48 hours to pick a favorite movie. So
to and be fair,
I watched
you did...
Finding Nemo on the regular.
To be fair, you gave me two movies after a couple hours, and one of them was called by someone else and is an upcoming episode. So that wasn't your fault.
No, but I'm still here for whenever you decide to delve into Sandra Bullock classic films.
I texted you the other day this. I'm not even lying to you. If you want to do a series on, if we just do a whole month of Sandra Bullock films, I'm absolutely down.
Like?
You got Speed, you got While You Were Sleeping, Miss Congeniality, just to name a few.
And I own all of those.
They're amazing.
So if that says something about me, you know, I don't know, but...
Wade, I'm not saying like we're I'm not saying we're soulmates, but we might be soulmates, except for your opinion on Finding Nemo and my opinion on Finding Nemo. But otherwise.
I mean, I think given enough time, I could turn you.
I mean, good luck.
Hey, we haven't watched it together.
That's very true. That's very true. I will say the thing that makes this movie so sad to me is Dory, just kind of just in general, the memory loss thing. And this is very embarrassing, but the you know, the movie 50 First Dates, I'm sure you do, as many yes. people do. My mom and I went to go see that, and I had to leave that movie because I was crying hysterically the whole time because that movie makes me sad. And it's not a sad film whatsoever.
See, I think I look at Dory and I just kind of see my future. Because I already like, can't remember things. And I'm like, I just have to be funny. I got it.
Oh, when Dory had to say, like, P. Sherman, 42, I'll be way, Sydney, like, 15 times, that's me at least 5 times a day trying to remember information. Like, right. And I'm like, all right, please remember this. Please. Oh, I relate to Dory now. But I'm just saying, like, there's just, like, that, like, especially, like, little Courtney, like, there was that inherent sadness.
It is. Oh, it's sad.
It is, but it's not nearly as sad as I'm making it.
Well, it's probably sadder than I'm making it. So, in the middle, it's
somewhere,
perfect.
I was going to say, it's somewhere in the middle. And we're just not, we need to find someone who's like that middle and be like, you both need to calm it down with Dory and like, her storyline.
Here's the name of a therapist. Call.
Yes.
I'm like, ah, okay.
Oh, finally. I've got a number and a name.
Perfect.
And then I'm just going to forget it just like Dory. It's so ironic.
Right. It's going to be totally forgotten in 10 years. I'll be like, ah, here's my sequel.
Exactly. Boom. That's what I'm just waiting for. My great sequel to come a decade and a half from now.
That's all we can hope.
Exactly. So who, this is not a really great segue, but who is your favorite character in this movie? Because I feel like you have a lot of fun people to pick from, especially on their way. I do like the vegetarian sharks. I think that's hilarious. I like the sea turtles with Crush and Squirt. And we meet a lot of fun characters along the way. So I'd say besides Marlin, Nemo, and Dory, who is your favorite character?
So favorite, okay, because that's what I was like, you really only have 3 main characters.
Yes. I mean, you have a supporting lot of good supporting characters. Awesome. It is. And you have that little tiny aquarium, little aquarium full with the dentist's office and their journey along the way. So who out of, I should say the supporting characters are your favorite? Or is your favorite?
I really enjoy the Tank Gang.
They're a lot of fun.
I would say they're my favorite. I mean, if I have to pick a favorite character from the film, just like character, I always go with the seagulls.
Yes.
Because they're just perfect. They are perfect.
They are.
They have one line. Exactly. They have the one line they just say over and over again.
And I think they might be the most famous part of this movie, to be honest.
Arguably so. Because when I was on, I forget what grade I was in, of course, but I went on a field trip to a state park back home, and we were like environmental field trip or whatever, and the guide was like, you know, seagulls from Finding Nemo say mine, 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 mine. He was like, that's what they really do. And that was it. There was like no other mention of the film, but the seagulls were there.
Ironically, the fish about, or the movie about fish, the seagulls are the most memorable part. But that's like all, I will say this too, from working in the parks, and I feel like you could back this up, all the Finding Nemo merchandise, a ton of it is just literally like 3 of the seagulls, and it just says mine, mine, mine. Like that's right. A ton of the merchandise.
I own that shirt.
Do you?
I do.
And I think at Epcot, they're like outside the ride, right? If I remember correctly, like you just hear mine, 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 like the whole, like as you're right, walking
that's,
in.
That's the entrance to the ride.
Yeah.
And you're it's immediately like. It's not any of the other characters. It's the seagulls.
Yeah. And you're just immediately like, oh, this is a Finding Nemo ride.
Right. And like, I think anywhere in the world you can relate that, you know, you might not know what a blue tang is, but right. You know what a seagull is.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not defining the fish type by the names of the characters from Finding Nemo. You know what I mean? Like, you're not defining the seagulls by, like,
right.
You're not calling them like the mine birds or, you know, something right, stupid someone right. would probably say, but they are great. I do love them. They made me yeah. laugh.
They're captured perfectly.
They are. Well, and that's just like, well, kind of like your guide was saying, like, that's literally what seagulls are. That's what they're about. That's mine now. I took it from you. Mine.
Right.
Classic. Great representation of seagulls in film. Really I feel is. Like it's just this movie.
It's one movie, but how positive.
Do the seagulls return in Finding Dory?
Maybe for a little bit. But I don't think, not nearly as iconic.
No. Could you imagine if they made, like, a seagull movie? Like, that was based off these seagulls?
I would watch
I'm surprised that. They haven't. Would you say you'd watch it?
Yeah, it'd be a classic hit.
And that's all they say the whole time. It's just that it's, like, 2 hours of them just going, mine. Just over.
Yeah, just different ones. Slightly different.
I feel like it turned into, like, the Minions movies. Like, you know how those have kind of just, like, grown? Like, I feel like that's right. what it would be.
It would.
Still kind of great, though. All right, so you say the tank gang. I keep calling it an aquarium. It's not really an aquarium. It is a tank.
Well, it is. I mean, they are aquariums. You're not yes. wrong. They're just officially called the tank gang.
Yes.
And that's how much of a nerd I am about this movie.
I thought you just called them the tank gang. No, I didn't know they were like officially the called it.
Like,
I
was together like, as a collective.
Wow.
I'm not I that smart. Like,
I was like, oh, wait, it even has, like, a cool name for them, the Tank
No,
gang.
No, no, I'm not that smart. Oh,
somewhere Disney's going, no, he did not come up.
I now owe them, like, $35.
Right, Wade, you're costing me money. Gotta stop mentioning trademark stuff that we don't own.
You know, I'm never gonna be allowed back.
No Sandra Bullock month here at Ghostface, isn't it? Just to spite you for all the money you've just cost me.
Just revoke my subscription to your podcast. Be like, this one particular account.
Yes. That's it. Everybody else can listen. You, this one, no.
You make it big, start doing live shows, and like, this one person.
Yeah, I'm just gonna have your like, picture, like, plastered everywhere.
From the unaired and, like, episode.
He cannot come into this building. So before we wrap up, I do want to see where Finding Nemo, I know it's one of your favorite movies, but where do you think it ranks as a Pixar film out of all the Pixar films that we do have? Because like we were talking about a little earlier, Pixar just does have these great, just a ton of great films. And like you said, this is a classic Pixar movie, which I completely agree with. But do you think this is the best film that Pixar's done?
I'm going to say yes, and I know people disagree. I know that's controversial. But
you know what? I mean, like, and I feel like it's, I always feel a little dumb asking that question, because obviously it's one of your favorite movies, but, like, I do think it's up there, especially after rewatching it last night. I think it is one of Pixar's better movies, but I did want to see if there was any movie that you thought maybe was like, better than this one on the Pixar lexicon, at least.
Right. I wouldn't say in the Pixar lexicon. I think there's a lot of movies that are very close to it.
Do you think this is, out of all Disney animation, do you think this is,
like... I don't think I would go that far.
Okay. I was just wondering.
I wouldn't say that, and I wouldn't say out of, like, all movies in the world, you know?
Right.
Like, I would say, as far as Pixar, I think it is, personally. Yeah. But I also know that there's, like, a bunch of very close seconds.
Yes. I mean, again, Pixar just has so many great movies that it really is, like, to even try and rank them, and unless it's Cars 2. I think we both agreed right. on that. Sorry, Cars 2.
Right, right.
That would have been pretty funny if you had been talking about Cars, and then you were like, well, yes, Cars 2 is a better film than Finding Nemo. I don't know why we're having this conversation.
Why am I here?
Why am I here? Courtney, I feel trapped on this podcast. I don't know why you put me in this position.
You've fed me an answer that I disagree with.
Yes, the obvious answer is Cars 2, the greatest film of all time.
But yes, no, I mean, it is truly like the one Pixar movie. Like, I've seen them all multiple times, but it is the one that I've watched the most.
Right. And again, it's one of those, and again, rewatching it last night, I mean, I think it is definitely, for me, I definitely think top five Pixar. Like, I mean, it just, there was a lot about it that I loved. I think I appreciated more as an adult as well. And that's another fun thing with movies like this, is that you really love it, like, when you're younger and you're a kid. And then once you get older, there's still something great to appreciate about it.
Right, right. It's not a film that just, like, is for kids or is for adults.
Right. It is, like, it is genuinely both.
Right, and you can pick up and watch it in different ways.
Right. Again, look at us talking to film like we know, man, what we're talking about.
It's like I paid attention in Cinema Survey.
Yeah. Sometimes when the Academy Awards are on and they say things, I pay attention.
I know what they're saying.
I know. I'm like, yes, you said the same thing last year when I watched your award show. And I agree.
Costuming. I know what that is.
The Oscar nominations are coming out tomorrow. And I always hate when it's like best sound editing, best sound design, because I feel like those are both the same because I'm not a technical person. No, and I do have someone I used to work with, and someone I talk movies about with. He's always really excited about sound in movies, and he always, like, he always knows what to pick in those categories. Like, boom, I'm always really random, and I always end up guessing wrong. So because I'm just like, yes, that movie did have sound,
right?
I don't
like, know. This was my favorite movie out of the group.
Yes, this is the one I would really love to see win. Oh, it didn't have great sound design compared to the others. Well, I did not know that. So, well,
I heard it.
Yeah, also with costume design, I was like, yes, the costumes were pretty in that film.
Right.
And then that's like the extent of my, this is why
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, there's multiple reasons I'm not an Academy voter. That's one of them.
Not yet. I feel like you'll get there. Not yet. You'll get there.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say. Although if anybody ever listens to this podcast, they'll be like, did you hear the end of that Finding Nemo podcast where they didn't know what sound
design? Where he said that she wrote a screenplay. It's gonna be your intro to the Oscars.
I'm not saying that my next screenplay is a rewrite on the classic Cars 2, but be prepared.
I'm ready. Somebody needs to remake it.
Bob Iger, are you still listening? I have ideas.
Please call her.
Please call me. Also, I have thoughts on Star Wars. Please call me.
Right.
Kathleen Kennedy, you too. Call me. I'm just going to make a list. Every time I do this podcast, I'm just going to add like three more people right. of note.
Every podcast, like, you have to add one more fake advertiser.
Exactly.
And one more person of note.
Exactly. I think one real advertiser, one fake advertiser. Maybelline, you were my real advertiser. Call me.
I'll use your 20% off code.
There you go.
I don't know what I'll buy, but I'll buy it.
I have one person who will use that discount code. Please call me. Maybelline's going to be like, seriously, stop mentioning our name. Like, it's like a buzzword. You keep popping up. Please don't.
Sorry about that.
I'm going to hashtag Maybelline on this. So, like, when people search for that, this pops up.
You really should. Just in the, like, description notes. Maybelline.
I'm going to. And then when I post this on Twitter, I'm going to at Maybelline. You get mentioned multiple times. Oh, and on that note, as I've gotten us off track, which I want to do, that was Finding Nemo. Wade, thank you very much for coming on the podcast to talk one of your favorite films with me.
Of course, it was fun. It was fun to be on something I listen to every week.
I was about to say, you are one of the three people that regularly listens to this podcast. So I very much appreciate your support, and
I am actively trying to get more.
You should lobby to get, what are the other podcasts you like? I'll lobby for you right now. We're going to get you on them.
Oh, that's not going to happen. It's okay.
Oh, well, fine. That's the last time I try and help anybody.
I won't plug on your podcast. No.
All right. Your podcast is
only for you and your advertisers from Maybelline and Disney.
Yes. Bob Iger and Kathleen Kennedy fully support this podcast. I feel like for legal purposes, I should say that was a joke.
These are all jokes.
These are all jokes. Maybelline does not support me. And so before I get myself even deeper, I'm going to sign off because I feel like I'm about to owe a lot of people a lot of money. But Wade, thank you again for coming on. I had a wonderful time talking Finding Nemo with you.
Yes, thank you. It was lovely to be here. Hope to be back for Sandra Bullock Month.
I'm going to make it happen. It's going to happen. We're doing this. This has been Ghost Facing It. Again, podcast where we talk favorite films with some of my favorite people. And we will see you guys next time. Bye.